you may look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back to this hour of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Next hour, Stan Deo, but this hour opening it up with, I want you to imagine this. I want you to imagine this. Because here is what we are facing. This is actually happening right now, folks, in Venezuela. I hope everyone is paying attention to this. The IMF is predicting that inflation in Venezuela is going to hit 720% this year. Yeah, okay. That's what they're predicting. Now let's take a look at the real story. Here you are in Venezuela. Now we received some information from someone who's actually living in Venezuela going through this. Right now, the average wage or average pay in Venezuela is 27,000 bolivars. That's their currency. And it's about $2,700 a month at the official.
27 on the black market. $2,700.
$27. See, it's $2,700 a month. At the official exchange rate of 10 bolivars to the dollar, but here's the problem. They don't have faith in their currency. They don't have faith in currency, period. But even at that rate, what's the better of the fiat currencies? It's the U.S. dollar. So here's what I want everyone to imagine, that we'll say in several months or a few months from now, you go into the grocery store and you want to buy a dozen eggs. You can't. Well, you could, but you can't. Okay. Because here's the problem. There are no eggs. Except the government-run stores, such as Mercal, Bicentenario. Those are government-run stores and they're supplied. But see, they run out of things really quick. And if you're not in line the day before, you could walk out empty-handed. And there's only a limited amount of food that you can buy in Venezuela. An open source story, one woman said the last time we had chicken was, any meat was in December. Okay. Now, according to economists, the mainstream economists, that the sharp drop in global prices of oil is in part responsible for the mess that Venezuela is in. That's the official line. So expect something similar here in America or wherever you are listening to this in the West. expect something like it. Well, you know what? It was a cyber attack or some odd thing. You know, couldn't be prevented. That's going to destroy our currency. So you go to buy eggs at your local grocery store. Plentiful right now. They won't be. Because what we're seeing happening in Venezuela is a picture of our future. Because it's all about socialism and social programs. It is not about the global, or at least not only about the global price of oil. I understand, we understand, most people understand with intellects that oil, main export of Venezuela, is a factor, the price of oil. However, it's not the only factor, and it's not the prime factor. And when you look into it, you have to look at the socialist policies of Venezuela. Look at what's taking place. Look at the graft. Look at the bail-ins. Look at the social welfare programs of Venezuelans. And there you will see what the problem is. Because the problems begin with socialism when the socialists run out of everyone else's money. That's when the problems start. And in Venezuela, that's exactly what has happened. Now there's a black market, for example.
And you said 720% IMF projected this year?
Well, yeah, but that's
And next
BS.
Year, they're projecting it to be a 1,200%.
Right. It's only going to get worse. You can go on the black market. If you take your bolivars for dollars and the exchange rate is about $27 for 2,700 bolivars, so you're getting $27. But even on the black market to buy eggs, it's like $150 mm-hmm. of U.S. dollars. Not of bolivars. So there's a black market that exists. And so for those people out there who are thinking that we're going to get by using the black market of fiat of currency that's stashed in your mattresses, look at Venezuela, study Venezuela, or at least listen to us as we study and report on Venezuela, because this is why we say gold and silver have their place, and people may respond, well, they're going to be thrown in the street. It's not going to be any good. Yeah, at some point that'll happen. That doesn't mean it's going to happen during this period. And people often use that as an excuse, that Bible verse as an excuse for, well, I wouldn't buy gold and silver because it's just going to be thrown in the streets and useless. Okay, I understand that, but generally speaking, most people who say that are the ones who are either have decided not to, or to invest and protect their wealth in gold and silver. And believe me, I've got there's no reason why I'm saying this. I don't own gold, silver to sell, to market, nothing. No. I'm saying this as a matter of fact, and to get people in the right course of thought, because again, here's that corruption of thinking and the perversion of Christianity, of the Bible. And I'm going to be really clear on this, because this is where we run into a lot of disagreement and a lot of problems. When the Word of God gets perverted, and when people profess to be Christians, and they'll lead off with, you know, this the doctrine, well, you know, it's, you know, or I think you know what I'm saying, okay? That when self-preservation takes a back seat, or preservation of not just yourself but your family takes a back seat, because, well, God will take care of me, or gold and silver has no value, you know. No, it will have value, just as your fiat currency will. But yes, there will come a point in time when it won't, when it will be thrown in the streets as prophesied, because it will not be any good. Is that moment today? No. Will that be during a recession or the depression or a socialistic meltdown like Venezuela is having? I guarantee you, if you had gold or silver in Venezuela, those people with that asset. If you look at the tiered structure in Venezuela of people, you will see, folks, you will see that those people that have those assets and who have prepared are in a whole different position. So, do not, and here's my issue, don't use Christianity as a crutch for laziness. Don't use Christianity as a crutch for not doing anything, whether it be ensuring your wealth, assuring that your family will be fed in lean times. Just admit the truth that you don't want to, or you don't believe it. Okay, you know, but do not say with authority that this is unbiblical. Because I can guarantee you the mother holding the child in the line since the night before in Venezuela, wanting just a carton of eggs at a government-run store and walking away empty-handed because they're all sold out because of socialism, of the socialistic policies. Well, you get the idea. But see, the big talkers won't talk about this. The big talkers are all about the positive nature and about how things are going to change when someone else is in the Oval Office. But this is not a change that will be allowed, or this is not a change that's going to be just given or be a result of someone new in the Oval Office. This has to come from the bottom up, as I've often said. The change has to come from the bottom up. It has to come up from the people who are thinking about what the Bible is saying and praying about what the Bible is saying and understanding what the Bible is saying and applying it to our lives. Because if you yourself, as a Christian, as a man, as the head of the family, I don't care if you're a guy or if you're a woman, if suddenly you find yourself in a position as a head of your family, maybe you're a 15-year-old young man, for reasons I don't know, suddenly you are the head of the family. That's a sad state, but maybe that's the case. Then get your act together, understand what's going on in other parts of the world, understand the bigger picture, and please don't use perverted Christianity as the reason for inaction, because that, my friends, I believe, are the people, will be the people in lines. And the people who are going to be asking why God has forsaken them. And that's just my view. And maybe that's a very harsh view. Maybe you might think, well, that's just too critical. But in dangerous times, if I see someone on a path of self-destruction, and in my life, I see it all the time. It's unfortunate how many people I know who are on paths of self-destruction. If you care about that person, then you intervene. You don't enable that person by perverting scripture or by saying, well, as a Christian, I really, it's not my place to judge. Who am I to judge? Because that's not right. If there's true agape love, it's what I understand that to be. And that, look, I'm not a minister, a pastor, a preacher. I'm not any of that. I'm just a guy who's an investigator, seeing things go to hell in a handbasket really quick. And people are going to get hurt. A lot of people are going to get hurt, and a lot of people are going to get caught in the crossfire when it does happen. And then you got, and you know, during this whole run up, you've got people who are biting the ankles of those trying to save others. Just saying. So look at Venezuela, and look at what's taking place. And if you can buy the commodities, you've got to buy it through a government run store, because, well, just because it's Venezuela and it's Bernie Sanders, essentially. It's the way Bernie Sanders, it's that socialist mindset. And every one of these Bernie Sanders idiots out there holding Bernie signs and wearing Feel the Burn shirts and protesting against Donald Trump people and flipping them off and throwing drinks and garbage at the supporters of Donald Trump. It is that mentality that is going to be the impetus, the spark for the remainder of the hot summer. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you, okay? I don't care if you, some people say, well, I don't have the money. I don't have the money for gold. I don't have the money. I get that. I don't either. You think I do? I don't have the money for gold or silver. So you, what you have to do is you have to, do you have the money for a 27-cent can of peaches from the grocery store? Start there. You got the money for some seed plants for vegetables? You got the room for a garden? Start there. Don't think about how much time you don't have to do this. Do something. Just do something. And you'd be surprised what you can do with not a whole lot. You'd be surprised of one can of peaches, one can of peas. Pretty soon it turns into 10, which turns into 100. And now you got food, maybe, for your family for a couple of weeks to get you through those times where you don't have to wait in line. But don't make excuses, and especially don't make excuses on the backs of Christians or at the doctrine of Christianity. Don't do that. This is my two cents. Oh, and you know, you don't have to send me emails saying, hey, you're so angry. I'm not angry. Well, you know, it saddens me. I'm sad, I suppose. I'm sad because people just look at this and, well, you shouldn't talk like that. Why not? You're going over a cliff, or you're about ready to get hit by a train. You think I'm just going to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you think about it. You want to move? There was a Clint Eastwood movie. I can't remember, with Tyne Daly in it, where she was standing behind the Laws rocket before it was going to be fired, and Clint Eastwood yanked her from behind the Laws rocket because of the blowback of the rocket. You know what I'm talking about? They're taking her head right off. I picture that in my mind for some reason. That was an old, back in the 70s movie, I think. You're going to tap her on the shoulder and say, you better move? I mean, hey, you want to think about moving? No, you grab her and you pull her away from the back end that's going to blow her head off. That's what you do. And the biggest objection I get from people from emails are, oh, you shouldn't be that forceful. Well, and get your own show. Or get your own website. Or just go ahead and try the tap on the shoulder business while the blowback takes the head right off the person you care about. See how that works out for you.
And, you know, people in Venezuela, they're complaining about waiting in line 12 hours a day just to buy basic necessities. 12 hours or more. Reading some of these first-hand accounts, you have mothers leaving their house at 1 a.m. to 12 hours later, still being 50 to 100 people back in line. Mothers not being able to buy diapers or formula for their babies. There's a limit on the amount of pasta and rice you can buy. For diapers, you need to have, you know, your kid's birth certificate and they have anti-hoarding laws in place.
Sure. Think about the supermarket loyalty cards here in America. Now, you might think it's well worth it to have supermarket loyalty cards. And I have a tendency to agree in theory. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a Kroger maybe or
I mean, around here you have Tops and Giant Eagle. They give you gas incentives if you use the card. Or
trying to remember what was up in the Adirondacks, up in the north, up in the upstate New York, where the place where Rachel Ray got her start. Anyway, they got loyalty cards. You see, that's a two-edged sword. Now, you know your appliances, smart appliances, can be spying on you. Right, you know that. And people would call people like us crazy saying, oh, yeah, but your toaster watching you, huh? I got that a lot. Oh, you know, like somebody really cares what you're doing, which is true. It'd be an awful boring if I was on Earth. I mean, you know. Anyway, but see, here's the thing. Your purchases is going to be traced by your debit cards and credit cards, and if you've got a credit card with a chip in it, data is being collected. Now, is it being, understand this, is that data being used for any specific purpose at the moment? I don't know the answer to that question, but what I do know is the infrastructure is being set up so that data can be used. So if you buy suddenly 100 pounds of rice, and you've never done this before, okay, but you go to Costco or Sam's or whatever, and all of a sudden you're buying rice by the, you know, 50 pound bags and multiple times, and you're buying, you know, lots of food And you're in, of course, Field and Stream. They give you that little loyalty card, you know, 10% off when you buy, you know, your brick of ammo. A profile. You're being profiled, folks. Simple as that. You're being profiled. Now, are people act they'll be going through these profiles? No, but when called up, when these profiles are called up, certainly they could be. But right now, generally speaking, no. You can fly under the radar because you can still pay cash for the 100 pounds of rice that you buy every other week or whatever it might be. There's still some level of anonymity behind that. The problem is that anonymity is eroding as we are now given cards with chips, and we are taking advantage of these loyalty cards because it gives us 5 cents off on a gallon of gas, or it gives us, you know, 10% off our next purchase of, you know, the rice or whatever it might be. But you get all these good deals online. But it's a surveillance mechanism because you cannot control what you can't see. This is why there's a war in cash. This is why there's a war, or this is why there's this push, mentally programmed push toward using loyalty cards. This is why there's a program push not to carry cash in your pocket, because of course cash is bad. Only drug dealers, and you're gonna see this develop. Only drug dealers are gonna be using cash, or only those people. See, only those people who are engaged in activity. In covert nefarious activity. Only those people are going to be using cash. And certainly no one. How many people carry a $100 bill? Drug dealers carry $100 bills. As a matter of fact, oh, it's so bad that drug dealers roll the $100 bills up and they snort coke through the $100 bills, you see, or 50s. So, and trade, you know, with $100 bills, and then think about what happened to the $500 bill. You know, I mean, folks, you know, we used to have a $500 bill, right? Until we didn't. Eric's going, to hold? You can buy it. You can buy them at the coin shops. Okay, and you tell me, and okay, here's, you tell me now, Eric, who is on the $500 bill? Folks, I'll tell you what, how do I go into chat here? Let's see, I'll go into chat on YouTube. All right, who's on the $500 bill? Let's make it fun. No, I think it's too late. Who's on the, we'll just make it for fun. Who was on the $500 bill? We'll see how many people were paying attention in chat. Okay, anyone have the Jeopardy tune handy? There you go. Or $1,000 bill. I'm sorry. Well, there's a $500 too, but $1,000 bill.
What about the $10,000 bill?
Oh, those are bank notes between banks, but... Come on. What is everyone?
I mean,
everybody, did I miss it?
No, don't forget the delay.
Is there a delay? Okay. So, Eric, who was on the $1,000 bill? You got to answer that question now. Oh, come on. Well, we'll see. Okay, while we're looking for that answer, here's the issue. The war on cash, people back even in the mid-19th century were convinced that we did not need the larger denomination bills. Now, we don't need any bills because of the convenience of the cards with chips, which can be controlled and every transaction can be monitored and taxed. That's a revenue/surveillance system. All right, so having said all of that, boy, people are shouting, Cleveland, McKinley, baby. Easy, guys, easy, easy.
Is it McKinley for the 500?
I think it was McKinley, and then...
two.
No. There shouldn't be two. There should be one 500 and then 1,000. And okay. One should say banknote, or... it should have different terminology. You should. Oh, man.
So it was Alexander Hamilton on the 1,000.
Or Marshall 500?
No. What are you into? What? The graphics are us
no, they
or
have
what?
Different, they have different series in different years, different types.
Oh,
it
looks like somebody else is getting educated.
Who, me? Probably. No, there were, okay, it doesn't, we're going down such a road here unnecessarily, but the point of all this is really simple. What we're seeing taking place in Venezuela is going to be happening here in the United States, but right now, given the unemployment, and this is a big argument among the people who you might have had a picnic with over the Memorial Day weekend, well, things aren't that bad. I mean, look at the Depression. There were food lines out the doors, and there were people starving and withering on the streets, and, you know, the chicken in every pot, remember that saying and such. Well, okay, if you start to think about this. Yes, we still have homeless. Homeless shelters are at record levels. Go ahead and look at the people who have been foreclosed upon or who cannot afford housing right now and are living. You got to start factoring the people who are living with others. Just like the unemployment numbers are being severed, manipulated. We're seeing the food numbers or the people who are hungry in this country being manipulated. If we did not have the EBT cards, if you had to go, we'll say to a central location like a DMV office for your EBT cards or for your food stamp cards, you would see something totally different. You would see lines. You would see the people, the amount of people who are on welfare benefits. This is not to disparage people who are on welfare benefits. I understand. I know people myself who are having hard times. I try to help them out. We try to help them out. We get all of this. Okay, we understand this. But what we're saying is the push for dependency is what it's all about, so you can be controlled, because the only way you can be controlled is by being a dependent of the state. And the state is going to make you a dependent whether you want to be or not by cutting off all egresses, all exit ways, all entryways. Anyway, if you're in the stadium, they're going to bar the doors.
And what they're doing in Scotland and throughout the European Union is a great example of this. They're now assigning a state snooper for every child in Scotland as they compile dossiers on the family life. It says that has chilling implications in the U.S. It says, just imagine that you are a parent and one of your daughters cuts the hair off Barbie dolls belonging to a younger sister. Cue the screaming. But years later, someone else learns about the Barbie incident during a casual conversation. Well, this is what's happening in Scotland. They have passed a law that a person with a child will have a snooper or an older guardian or visitor attached to them. Without your permission, allowed to gather information about you and your children in secret, run by state agencies and police, social services. The snooper does not have to possess a sense of proportion or humor that is essential when addressing the issue of warning children. This synthetic It goes on. It says, the government appoints busybody person to open a file on you and your family. So, in Scotland, they passed a law that is going to be enforced starting in August by the new SNP, Nicola Sturgeon. And it's the young, it's the Children and Young People Act. It comes into force in August. It will inevitably be one of those bills that is very Orwellian, the most Orwellian in any country, they say. For children under five, this so-called named person will be their health visitor. For older children, it will be the candidate is their head, their teacher, or a related family member. Intelligence gatherers will impose on each and every family by the state. They are able to mount perceptions in secret of the families allotted to them. There's no right of appeal against their findings. There is no automatic right to know what their findings are, and there is no way to prevent the judgments from their findings from spreading out across bureaucracy and the public perception.
Interesting. Before wait a second, stop right there. Before my email box explodes. Thank you. Okay, I'll give you the answer. And you can just search Federal Reserve notes, denominations, years, okay? Really quick, and then you can go back to what you're saying. 1928 series, $500, William McKinley, okay? $1,000, Grover Cleveland. And then, now the larger series used were really for interbank transfers and such, $5,000 bill, James Madison. And on the $10,000 Federal Reserve note, bear in mind, the Federal Reserve note was Salmon P. Chase. Okay. Gee, I wonder where that came from. The date of the series, a 1928 series, ran from, for example, 1928 through, I think, I'm looking here, 1934 is when they stopped on the $500 dollar bill, and then $1,000 bill is the same. So, but the $500 bill in general was used for circulation, for general circulation, or allowed for general circulation, but prohibited by the Federal Reserve. Go ahead and
finish.
While
we're on the topic of money, we talked about the changes that are coming to the latest series.
But go ahead, and because this is all part of it as well. I mean,
was that Harriet Tubman's going to be put on the 20?
Yeah, and in fact, I lobbied for my picture, but you see how far that got me.
No, but
before we go there.
Okay, yes. You're going to correct me, right?
No.
Okay.
So there's almost 50 million people on food stamps in America.
Mm-hmm. This is Eric the Tech, by the way.
Can you imagine what's going to happen if that's lifted?
Mm-hmm.
And they all of a sudden don't have... Like, I can't... It's...
So well,
that's insane.
Okay, so 50 million people on. That's about Eric makes a good point.
A sixth of our population, roughly.
All right. So you've got a sixth of our population. Now think about this, Eric. Don't go away because this is important. 50 million critters, people.
Out of
I should
330
say critters, people. People.
Million.
Out of three. Okay. So what you're saying is that goes away. Then what happens? Right. It's going to be 50 million. How many of the 50 million do you think will say?
I'd say at least half. Some
take their own
supplemental income. For others, it's every and all they of their income. You have those that use the welfare system to the advantage of themselves, and you have those that use it when needed.
Well, okay.
Those who use it to the advantage of themselves are going to be the first ones out of supplies with no resources or way for them. It'll be like Venezuela instantly.
Eric, you think so? I mean, 50
if
million.
If not more than half that 50 million figure, I'd say more.
If they pull the rug out, what's going to happen?
I just think it's going to be nuts, especially if you live in like a city like Erie, where a lot of people do rely on this.
I don't know if it even be bad here would be in bigger cities, but yeah, we have about 108,000 people. I don't know what the statistics are as far as what percentage of the population here uses welfare for all or some of their income.
I mean, people just breaking in to steal food, and I can just picture it.
And then the, in combination with the densely packed cities, imagine buildings, you know, 10, 20, 30 stories high, full of people, the whole buildings, you know, shut off from any resources. Those people instantly will be out on the streets looking to survive and coming to a door near you. That's guaranteed.
It's pretty sobering, 50 million people in the United States alone.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people mention this a lot, but it doesn't... I don't think people go through the mental process of how this would play out just if the EBT aspect of things were cut off. It would be a nightmare for everybody in this country for a time being. Especially with the mentality most Americans have.
When that happens, what will be the medium of choice? In other words, okay, let's just say the banks say, or the government says, okay, we're done. We're going to bail in, not bail out, but bail in the banks using your money.
The Federal Reserve disappears and all their money instruments with it.
So those people who have gold and silver, who have prepared, we'll say, are they going to see? And how long? Here's the other thing too. You got to ask yourself: how long would something like this last? How long do you prepare for? You prepare for as long as you can, but
there is no ideal preparedness.
Okay,
marker out.
Okay, but I think that levels. And if you look at Venezuela, there are still people who are going to beauty shops in Venezuela. Okay, that. Mm-hmm. There are different levels.
Junk's being sold on the street for very cheap. I'm not talking non-food, non...
Right. But, I mean, there are still TVs that are being purchased. But you've got these very disparate classes of people. You've got various economies going on at the same time. So those people who say, well, gold and silver wouldn't be worth crap. Well,
it would be.
I'm sure at many levels it wouldn't be. But you've got multiple economies going within a country. Okay. Just as cigarettes or liquor or whatever vice will be a commodity to trade with, there will be people who will be living within the borders of a country, whether you're living in Europe, listening to this program, or in the United States or in Canada, who are going to be trading with something, including gold and silver, and even cash. Cash will still have some intrinsic value. Now, it's going to be on a black market, and it'll be written down extremely heavily, but, right? But food and water is going to be the big thing among the majority of the people. But you're going to have a subset of economies, or numerous other economies taking, you know, going on at the same time. So I don't get why people say, well, you know, these absolute sayings, gold and silver won't be worth anything. So I wouldn't, you know, that's kind of like saying, oh, I shouldn't prepare. Because you've got to. Because what next? Well, what good would a can of food do you? Just one can. Or somebody could take it from you. What good's a gun going to do? You going to kill everybody you see? They're nonsensical statements to me. Am I getting my point across, or am I just muddying the waters even more?
No, you're getting your point across.
All right, but because people will barter with ammo. People are going to barter with cigarettes, with liquor, with antibiotics. I mean, anything will become a barterable item. So to just brazenly say, well, hey, you know, Bible said gold and silver is not going to be worth anything. Yeah, at some point, it most certainly is going to be worthless in terms of your survival, but I guess, you know, during that course, that rocky period, to get through to the other side. And I'm not talking about the God's wrath. I'm talking about the what we see going on in Venezuela here. I'm not talking about, you know, Nephilim and or the, you know, the end of days, end of days. And people have a tendency to kind of close their minds off because, again, it's a lack of preparation or it's the belief, and suddenly you realize, oh, wait a minute, I could be wrong. I might have to kind of survive for a while. But don't worry. Listen to the normal syndicated talk show hosts on the AM stations, and everything is fine. And you won't have to worry about anything. So just keep, you know, keep listening. It'll be fine. Or listen to the positive Christian people out there who are just blowing smoke that way, and you'll be okay too. Whatever gets you through the night there and the day, and whatever allows you to look yourself in the mirror, I suppose, right? All right.
And when Stan comes on, you know, it said water, food, water first, food second. A gallon per person per day. Dare to Prepare, Holly's book, is an excellent resource for dealing with preparedness in all aspects, and how you can do it by storing food to creating self-sustaining food and other resources for yourself. This article I wanted to hit, this is from the AP, this has been on Drudge today. As the European Union links up with Twitter and tech firms to combat hate speech. This from Brussels, out of the AP. The European Union reached an agreement Tuesday with some of the world's biggest social media firms, including Facebook and Twitter, on ways to combat the spread of hate speech online. Under the terms of a code of conduct, the firms, which include YouTube and Microsoft, have committed to quickly and efficiently tackling illegal hate speech directed against anyone over issues of race, color, religion, dissent, or national or other ethnic origin. The site has often been used by terrorist organizations. These sites, they say, have been used by terrorist organizations to relay messages and entice hate against certain individuals or groups. Among the measures agreed with the EU's executive arm, the firms have said they will establish internal procedures and staff training to guarantee that a majority of illegal content is assessed and, when necessary, removed within 24 hours. They also have agreed to strengthen their partnerships with civil society organizations who often flag content that promotes incitement to violence and hateful conduct. The European Commission and the firms have also agreed to support civil society organizations and deliver anti-hate campaigns. Now, this is only a matter of time before this affects us here in the U.S. And remember, what is deemed as hate speech by these people sometimes is the truth pertaining to facts. Regardless of that truth, they will deem it to be hate speech because it goes against their ideology. I mean, we see that every day in the news. We see that in the Trump campaign coverage. We see that in the Hillary email scandal. Everybody's truth seems to be different.
Hate speech and free speech, unfortunately, or fortunately, are tied at the hip. You disallow dissenting opinions. You disallow mm-hmm. free speech. You redefine what hate speech is. You become now the total arbiter of what's right and wrong and what's tolerable and what isn't. You've now subjected yourself where you either have become a tyrant or have subjected yourself to tyranny. And I'll say this, it is coming to this country before Obama leaves office, and you can mark my words on this, before Obama leaves office, it will be hate speech to engage in calling Islam the cult that it is. It will be hate speech to call a transgendered person that's not even right, a homosexual sodomite anything but something like gay. Okay, you get my drift here. The takedown of the free speech in America is paramount, because also the takedown of the Second Amendment. And don't think for one moment that both Obama and Hillary Clinton are giving up on the taking down of the Second Amendment.
Clinton has outright stated in speeches on the campaign trail that she's against the Second Amendment and has plans to change the whole Constitution, basically, from the Fourth Amendment to Second Amendment. She said that she would work to ban guns in certain areas and create registries and get a stranglehold on the Second Amendment. And I'm paraphrasing from her own words that she used about a month ago.
Yep. Well, the Second Amendment, contrary to the beliefs of the Fabian socialists, the socialists, the progressives, the liberals, the Marxists, or just the plain idiots out there, the Second Amendment is not for hunting. It's not for self-defense. It's to arm yourselves to get rid of the tyrannical despots that occupy the positions of authority in your country, as delineated by our forefathers, which earned them the designation of terrorists themselves. That's what the Second Amendment is for, and the Second Amendment protects our right to free speech. Nowhere am I advocating right now the overthrow of any government or our government. No, I'm just saying what it is for. If you read history and understand history, you know what it's for. So, to your low intellectual, low information brother-in-law, sister-in-law, aunt, uncle, son, father, mother, brother, you know, two-headed babysitter, I don't know, tell them, you'll have to educate them on what the Second and First Amendment really are for. You know, it's uncomfortable. Oh, sometimes it's uncomfortable to hear some things that the first, you know, are said under the guise of the First Amendment. But I certainly will fight to my death for you to be allowed to say that. And it's interesting because there's a lot of confusing and conflating. It's interesting to see how a lot of people don't think things through or will say, well, gee whiz, you advocate like targeting or boycotting Target, for example, but they're just exercising their right to do what they want to do. I want people to think about that for a second. Okay, think that through. Now, on the surface, it sounds logical, okay? It sounds logical.
Until they want to take your family or kill you.
Well, it's even more subtle and more dirty than that. It's even worse than that because it almost sounds, wait a minute, you know, boy, you got a point. I tell people to boycott Target because of their bathroom policy. I'm actually advocating censorship in a way. Man, boy, am I being two-faced in a way? No, think it through. Okay, think it through. Understand the various components of that, please, because I've gotten emails like that. Boy, you're a hypocrite. You're a hypocrite. You're telling people to boycott Target. And I've got, yes, I am telling you to boycott Target. Yet you say you're for the First Amendment, and you say you're. Do we have to have this discussion? If you just go quietly in a room and think it through, just think the whole process through. I'm convinced those people who send me the emails. Once it's thought through, you'll understand where the fallacy exists, or not, and then you'll send me more emails.
This from The Intercept: appeals court delivers devastating blow to cell phone privacy advocates. Courts across the country are grappling with a key question for the information age: when law enforcement asks a company for cell phone records to track location data in an investigation, is that search under the Fourth Amendment? By a 12-3 vote, an appellate court judges in Richmond, Virginia on Monday ruled that it is not and therefore does not require a warrant. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld what is known as the third-party doctrine, a legal theory suggesting that consumers who knowingly and willingly surrender information to third parties therefore have no reasonable expectation of privacy in that information, regardless of how much information there is or how revealing it is. Meaning, you have a computer that uses Microsoft Office, Windows 10, or a phone that you either have a carrier subscription or you buy minutes sending text, emails, and using it for phone calls. They no longer need a warrant in order to go through your real-time information and location tracking. They still need a warrant for past emails or past texts. And I know it sounds confusing, but what they're doing here, by a 12-3 vote again, says that the question for the information age, when is the cell phone records to track location data in an investigation, is that under the Fourth Amendment? They said no. So, basically, and then they expanded on it in the by saying that you have no reasonable expectation of privacy when you use a third-party device or company to send that information. So regardless of the mechanism used to share information, whether it's a computer via email or phone via text, your information, you have no expectation of privacy, according to this ruling. And the 5th, 6th, and 11th circuits have reached the same conclusion. And they say it's time for the Supreme Court, another Supreme Court precedent to end these other appeal court rulings, that they need a universal front against this. I'm looking for the law here. And I remember this when this passed, trying to read this. It was the Electronic Information Act, I believe. Where is it? Electronic Communication Privacy Act, which the House passed, requiring law enforcement to get a warrant to search old emails, is still the law. But when it comes to real time information and location, police involvement, they can capture your cell phone information and computer information to find out what you said and where you are without a warrant, before you needed a warrant, now that you don't need a warrant. The three judges in the minority wrote a strongly worded dissent, which says only time will tell whether our society will prove capable of preserving age-old privacy protections in this increasingly networked era. But one thing is sure, this court's decision today will do nothing to advance that effort. Those from the three judges. And it goes on to say, this is a sign that lower courts are still following this third-party doctrine. Orrin Kerr, a law professor at George Washington University Law School, said to this paper, The Intercept, I think the Fourth Circuit correctly applied Supreme Court law, but that doesn't tell us what the Supreme Court might do. Listen to this statement again. I think the Fourth Circuit correctly applied Supreme Court law, but that doesn't tell us what the Supreme Court might do. Well, this case removes the circuit split, he wrote, when a Supreme Court's consideration of a third-party doctrine issues will probably happen eventually. A staffer attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union Speech Privacy and Technology Project said he remains hopeful. In virtually every one of these cases, there have been very strong dissent that in itself is a very strong message, sends a very strong message to the Supreme Court. He also pointed out that many judges in the majority on these cases have signaled that it may be time for the Supreme Court to revisit the issue, and in several appellate cases, judges have called on Congress to do something about it. And with that, we are at the top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Stan Dale. Go to his website, standale.com. On the right-hand side, click on the microphone, the show images page, and follow along with the content Stan's got to talk about. I'm sure he's got a number of interesting things, as he has for the last, well, we've been having him on for a few years. And you can actually pre-order Holly's book. That's right up there at the front on the show images page section for this end of May 2016 on the Hagman and Hagman Report. We'll be right back with Stan Dale on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
is the Global Star Radio Network.